Morning to everyone. It's good to be here. I greet you in the name of Jesus. And I trust that today will be a profitable day for you. It will be a day of encouragement, a day of learning. I trust that what I have to share this morning will be able to inspire you to walk in your Christian life in a better way, to be more committed to your what you have vowed to the Lord, to follow Him and to do what He wants you to do. I think I'd like to begin this morning with a little bit of a story that happened to me when I was probably about 12 or 13 years old. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I do remember when I was that age, I would spend most of my afternoons with my cousins down by the creek, and we would go swimming. And we did this. I didn't have much else going on in my life at that point except to help around the house. And when I got my work done, we would meet there every day. Well, this place also served as a place for camping from time to time. About once a year, these same cousins, we would get together and we would go down to this spot by the creek and get our sleeping bags and spend the night there. We'd often do it in August, as I recall, because that's the time when the meteorites would be falling more profusely in, from the sky, and you'd lay there on the ground and see how many of those you could see. And we did what you always do when you have a camp out. We built a fire, and we'd take things to cook our own meal over that fire in the morning. And this particular time, we did all of that. And we slept out, and we got up in the morning and build a fire, and of course we built a fire as you are supposed to build a fire. We put rocks around. This was in a grassy area. It was dry grass in the middle of the summer, so it wasn't too green down there anymore. And we put rocks around that spot to make sure the fire would stay within that spot. We didn't want it to get out and cause problems. And so that particular morning we built that fire and we cooked our breakfast inside of those rocks, and it was time to go. About 10 o'clock or so, it was time to go home. And so we got water from the creek, and we dumped water on that fire and put it out. And we gathered our things up, and we left. We went back home. Home for most of us was just a mile or two away. It wasn't too far away. I said it was about 10 o'clock. I think it was earlier. Maybe it was about 10 or 11 o'clock. An older cousin of mine, who wasn't at the camp out, was driving down the road. This where we camped was back away from the road a half a mile or so along the creek. And he was driving down the road, and he looked back in where we had been camping, and he saw a tendril of smoke coming up from that area. And he immediately drove back there, because where we were camping, we were in a grassy area. There was also a stack of hay, straw bales, I believe, not too far from where we were camping. He grew back there immediately, and he discovered that the fire that we had thought that we had put out had not been put out. And somehow that morning there was a bit of a breeze, and somehow that breeze had blown on that fire that was supposed to be out, and it rekindled it. And it had moved through the rocks and into the grass and was making its way toward that stack of straw, threatening to burn that up. Well, he got back there in time. It wasn't a real huge forest fire or anything like that. He was able to put it out on his own. And he put that fire out. The thing that I wanted to emphasize from that particular story is that inside that circle of rocks, there was a fire. We thought we had put that fire out, but it wasn't. What did it take to bring that fire back to life? All it took was a wind. All it took was a little breeze to blow on that, and it kept blowing on it, and it blew on it, and it blew on it, and eventually that fire came back to life, and it started to burn. I imagine there was a flame. There had to be a flame. A flame came, and when we left, all you could see was just some pieces of wood there that were burnt. And there was no fire. There was no smoke. There was nothing. We had put it out. Or we thought we had. This morning, I'd like to take my message from two verses in 1 and 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 1. I'll read them first in the King James, and then I will read them from the NIV, because the title of my message actually comes from the wording as it is in the NIV. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. Wherefore I put thee in remembrance, that thou stir up the gift of God which is in thee by the putting on of my hands. For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, and of love, and of a sound mind. The NIV says it like this: For this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God hath not given us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. The title of my message this morning is Fanning the Flame. Fanning the flame. Paul talks to Timothy here and he says, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God. I hope this morning that we can catch a vision of the responsibility that each one of us has to fan the flame that we have burning in our lives so that there is a fire there. We have a vision to do that personally. We also have a vision to do it to each other within your church. And we have a vision to create a light that burns brightly, a light of understanding, a light that becomes a beacon in the night for someone who's struggling, a light that guides you and others on the pathway of truth, fanning the flame. I desire, as an individual, I don't know all of you here very well, but I desire, I'm sure you all desire, to see God's fire burning brightly in your life and in everyone's life here. You'd like to see that. You desire to do your part to help and encourage the fire of God to burn in your life and in all the lives of the people around you. You have a desire to see a connection to the point where people know where, when, and how to provide air to the struggling flames that may be around you. Maybe there's a flame that's struggling in your life. Maybe your fire's not burning too brightly. Maybe it's just a little bit of a flame. Maybe it's just a little bit of a smoke. Maybe there's nothing there. And you're like, why should I continue? Why should I go on? What's the point? What's the purpose? What difference does it make? And you look around you and other people seem to have their lives put together. They seem to be serving God. They seem to be successful. They're victorious. Everything looks pretty good. And you're like, well, what difference does it make? You have a responsibility as a child of God to look into your own life and to blow on that flame, to blow on that fire, to blow on that, I don't know what word to use. I guess we'll just call it a flame at this point. You have a responsibility to look in the lives of the people around you and to blow on that flame. Because your goal is not a little pilot light that just burns. Your goal is to have a fire that is burning, not out of control, but burning to the point where it makes a difference. And people see it and are encouraged by it. But you say, well, I can't do that. You say, I don't know how. I don't have the ability. And if I do try to do something, I'll just mess it up. If I do try to blow on someone's flame, they'll just refuse to let me do it. And so you step back and you say, that's not my job. I'll let somebody else do it. Or maybe you look around you and say, well, that's a big problem. I see that person's struggling, but I see this person, and I see that person, and I see this person over here, and I can't go do it for everyone. Why should I even begin? And so you step back and don't do anything. Maybe as your church here gets larger and there's more people and things happen and you don't even find out about them. You don't even hear about them until all of a sudden the problem is there and you're like, oh, I didn't even know that was a problem. I didn't even know I should go over there and help that person. I didn't even know that they needed somebody to encourage them, to blow on their pile of ashes or their flame or whatever you want to say. I didn't even know that was a need. Or maybe there's a situation where you see somebody and you realize there's a need, But you also sense at the same time that they don't want you to get very close to them. They don't want you to talk to them. They don't want you to get involved with them. And you step back and say, well, I'm just not going to do anything. That's not the goal this morning. The goal is for each of us to make sure, each of us to look inward, first of all, at our own lives, and to blow on the flame. Paul said here to Timothy, he said, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God. He says, Timothy, take the time to make that fire burn in your own life. And then I want to expand that to say, Timothy, take the time to make that fire burn in the lives of others. Because that is really when something will get done for the kingdom of God. You know, I mentioned a little bit ago the idea of a pilot light. And I think many times we find ourselves slipping into this, what I have called, I can't find it here now. But anyway, the pilot light, yes, here it is, the pilot light satisfaction syndrome. And what I mean by that is we sit back and we say, well, I've got a pilot light. What are you talking to me for? My pilot light is burning. There's a flame there. But let me ask you a question. How many loaves of bread have been cooked and baked, I should say, by a pilot light in the oven that uses gas? How many loaves of bread have become something of value, something that can be eaten with the pilot light? It doesn't work. There's very little value in a pilot light. You say, well, there has to be a pilot light if there's going to be a fire. And there is that value. I will acknowledge that. But if you're sitting back and you're saying, well, listen, I got a pilot light. I have a fire. That's not what God wants for you and me. It's just to have a pilot light. He wants us to have something that can actually bake the bread. He wants us to have something that can actually heat the house. How many houses? My mother lives in a mobile home next to our house, and she has a gas furnace. And when it's time for that gas furnace to come on, it fires up and it burns. And some of you may have something like this at home. But it starts from a pilot light. But I'm telling you, if that pilot light stayed a pilot light the whole time, she would be on the phone to me real quick saying, John, that it's not very warm over here. My furnace isn't burning very warm. It's not giving me much heat. And I'd say, Well, don't worry, Mom. There's a pilot light there. Everything will be fine. You just have to. There's a fire there. Now just relax, and everything will be fine. You'd look at me and you'd say, "You're crazy. You need to go over there and make sure that pilot light bursts into a flame, so she has heat." That's the way it needs to be in our Christian lives. And while there needs to be a pilot light, my caution here is that we don't get into the rut of thinking, well, I've got a pilot light, so everything's okay. That's not what Paul is telling Timothy here. He doesn't say, get a pilot light. He says, fan that pilot light into flame so that you can make a difference. And if you want to make a difference in your church here, if you want to make a difference in the kingdom of God, then you will do something more than a pilot light. You will have something more than a pilot light in your life. This morning, it's a big job, and the larger a church gets, the bigger it becomes. To be a good blower of air, to be a good fanner, as it were. But it's of extreme importance if you want a successful church. If you want a church that really functions with a working, living, meaningful brotherhood, there has to be a lot of this going on. You have to do it in your own life. You have to do it for the people around you. You know, a little wind makes a fire burn. And a little wind in your life and in the lives of people around you makes that fire burn. But you know what? A little water puts that fire out. And I'm just so, it bothers me so much when I find myself having more of a tendency to throw water on the fire rather than to blow air on the fire. You say, well, sometimes that's just what they need. They need to hear the truth. And so I'm going to tell them the truth. And yes, they do need to hear the truth. But they need to hear it in such a way that it makes fire come to life. Not in such a way that it puts the fire out. You say, well, truth shouldn't put the fire out. Well, sometimes I'm afraid it does. Because of the way we put it on there. Because of what we're using to try and put that fire. What we're using in relation to that fire. You can add wind or you can add water. What are you going to add? What are you adding today? What did you add last week? When you talked with your somebody from this church, when you talked with your children or your wife or your husband at home, what did you put on that fire? Did you blow it so it burns a little brighter? Or did you throw water on it so that it almost goes out, or so that it went out? Which is it? I think today that really when we look at the picture, when we look at our churches, and that probably when you look at your church here, you would probably say, you'd probably agree with me that there's a fire that's burning in each person here, each person who has given their hearts to the Lord, who has a relationship with God. There's a fire there. But you may see it in different ways. Maybe you believe there's a fire in that person's life, but you really can't see anything. But you give the benefit of the doubt, and you say, there is a fire there. We heat in our house with a fireplace, an insert. And I have many times gone to that fire, that insert, and opened it up, and looked inside and said, there's nothing here. All it is a pile of white ashes. There's no heat, there's no fire. Only to stir around in that, and to realize, oh, here comes a big red ember, and it's just cherry red. But when I looked in there the first time, it was nothing. I would have said the fire was out. Maybe there are some lives like that here. Maybe there are some lives that all you can see is just a little smoke. There's no flame, but there's evidence there's something there. Maybe that's how you would describe the fire. Maybe there's a little flame. Not hardly burning, but there is a little flame. Maybe there's one that's burning brightly. You know, going back to the insert illustration, I've started many fires in that insert, and I've blown on them for a long time. You start the fire, even when you have paper, and you have wood, and you have paper in there, and you have wood on top of it, you light the paper, and paper should burn, should it not? But it doesn't always. And I find myself face in the insert, blowing and blowing and blowing. Why? Because that fire needs air so that it will take off and burn. Now maybe there are some of you sitting here saying, well, you just don't know how to start a fire. And I don't profess to be the best fire starter. But I do know that when a fire looks to be out and you put air on the fire, it will come back to life. It will start burning again, even though it looks like it's done. And I believe that's true in the Christian life today. And I really urge you as a church, as fellow believers, as a brotherhood, to take the time to look at the people around you and see what you can do to make there be a flame and not just a smoke and not just a pile of ashes. But before you do that, make sure you take a look at your own lives. So just a few words of encouragement here. This is maybe me trying to blow on your flame a little bit. And I would like to take this from verse 7 that I read there, 2 Timothy 1:7. For God, again from the NIV, for God did not give us a spirit of timidity or fear, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline, or sound mind, as the King James says. Here we see a tug of war, as it were. It's fear versus power, love, and a sound mind or self-discipline. And you know what? Your heart, your life is the battleground where this is being fought. And the question we have as God's people is, what is going to be controlling? What is going to be the most powerful influence? Is it going to be fear? Or is it going to be one of these other three which battle against fear in our lives? Personally, I would like to say to each of you here, don't be fearful. Don't be afraid. Don't let fear rule. The call of God on your life is not a call for fear. It's not. But Satan will bring into your life all kinds of fearful things. All kinds of things that many times don't even make sense. It was just, we traveled here over the last several days. And our little girl, very, very active little lady, and she was in the motel room the other evening. And she was twirling around and I don't know what she was doing exactly, but whatever she does. And she was twirling around and she fell down and she hit her chin right here on the corner of a nightstand that was between the two beds. And it wasn't too long, there was a bruise there and there was a mark. And I didn't think about it that much then. But I was laying in bed later. And I don't know why this came to me, but a very real fear came to me that the wrong person's going to see that and we're going to have problems, and this doesn't make any sense. Please understand. I don't know where it came from. You know, that we're going to have this child services after us because I did something to my daughter. And I wrestled with that. But it went away after a while, thank the Lord. But it was very, very real that night. For some reason, I have no idea where it came from. Because as far as I know, that's not going to happen. But even so, fear is a very real thing. And God doesn't call us to live in fear. Because it will bind you up. It will blind you. You won't be able to know the truth. You won't be able to see the truth. You won't be able to know, you won't be able to relate to the truth because fear's got you in its grasp. It'll paralyze you. It'll confuse you. You won't be able to understand the truth. And finally, fear will destroy you and make you a person that is of little value. So Paul says to Timothy here, when you're fanning your own flame, don't give in to fear. Get rid of that. Because fear will put that fire out. David says it like this in Psalm 91, verses 1 to 6. You turn to that if you'd like, you don't need to. I have it written here. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. Surely He shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with His feathers, and under His wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. David says, you don't have to be afraid. There's nothing that's going to come in here and harm you because God will take care of you. God has not given you the spirit of fear. So get rid of that. If you want that fire in your life to burn brightly, get rid of that fear. Then on the other side of the coin, so that's over here, and evidently fear is extremely powerful, and I know it is, I believe it is, because on the other side of this balance, as it were, Paul says three things to counteract that. First of all, he says, you've been given the spirit of power. Be powerful. Don't be arrogant. Don't be obnoxious. Don't be rude, but be powerful. God has given you the spirit of power. The call of God on your lives is to live in power, to overcome. And you can do, excuse me, you can do that. God's power will motivate you. Think of the story of Esther. When she was facing that decision, shall I go into the king or shall I not? I haven't been called. If he doesn't like me, he will kill me. If he doesn't like that I came in because he didn't call me, he will kill me. But she believed in her God, and she stepped forward in that power. The story that Brother Ralph read earlier, power energizes you. This power from God. Story of David and Goliath. Where did David get his power? Do you think he could throw that stone so hard that he, well, I suppose he could. I mean, he was very good with the sling, obviously. But I believe God also directed that stone and added energy to that throw. David had that power, and it energized him to step forward and tell that Goliath, that giant, I'm not afraid of you. I will fight with you, and I will win. And he did. This is the kind of power that will cause your fire to burn bright for God. Power sustains you. It'll keep you going. This power will keep you going. Another Old Testament story. The three Hebrew children. How many of you young men would have liked to have been thrown into a fiery furnace to walk around? I don't enjoy getting that close to heat. And I don't think they did either. But there was a power that sustained them. A power that protected them. A power that saved them. And this is the kind of power that you need in your life to cause your fire, to fan that flame in your life to burn more brightly. He says the second thing here is, be loving. The call of God on your lives is a call to love. You know, love is not necessarily an easy thing. It seems like it should be easy to love each other. It seems like that in a church fellowship, it shouldn't be hard for you men to love the brother beside you or behind you, or you ladies, the same with you. But how many of you struggle with that? How many of you say, well, I just don't like that person. We just don't get along very good. We have a personality conflict. My manner of approaching things is different than theirs, and you know, they're just old fashioned, or they're just not educated, or they're just, you know, they got an agenda. The list goes on and on and on. But Paul says to Timothy, fan the flame. And to fan the flame, you need to love. This love touches everybody. It touches every circumstance. It touches all people in your church, all people in your life. The kind of love that will fan that flame into a fire. Again, remember, there's fear over here, and fear will hold us back from really, truly loving a person next to us. Fear will offer us all kinds of reasons why love should not be offered. But Paul says here, this is an antidote to fear. Which in your life is going to get the upper hand? The spirit of fear or the spirit of love? The spirit of power and of love. The final thing that Paul mentions in this verse is the spirit of sound mind or self-disciplined mind. God's call again is for us to be people who are disciplined, self-disciplined. How many of us are dependent upon the discipline of somebody else? As soon as you're out from under that discipline, you're just a loose cannon and you go wherever the wind blows you. You know, all of you children are sitting here, those of you that are still at home, you're under the discipline of your parents, and you need to thank God for that. Someday you won't be. Someday you will be somewhere else. And then what's going to happen? Paul says here that if we want that flame to burn brightly, we need to have that spirit of self-discipline so that you can stand, so that you can grow, so that you can be a man and a woman that is quiet and content, so that you can be a person who has their priorities where they ought to be, who has their priorities in the right order. Your goal is to be godly, and you live a life that shows that. You're self-disciplined. You have a sound mind. So I encourage you this morning to reject the spirit of fear. Fill your lives with the spirit of power, spirit of love, and the spirit of a sound mind, the spirit of self-discipline, which God gives to each of his children. I mentioned earlier others. You should be looking at ways in which you can fan the flame in the lives of people around you, and others should be looking at ways that they can fan your flame. That needs to happen. But before that needs to happen, you need to fan your own flame. You need to do what you must do as an individual in your personal life to keep that flame burning and burning brightly. Again, don't be satisfied with that pilot light idea. While it's necessary for those illustrations that I gave you, a pilot light is necessary for there to be a big flame. And in a spiritual sense, a pilot light is necessary for that flame to be big, I suppose. The problem is we become dependent upon that, and we find our security and we find our satisfaction in having a pilot light. Don't go there. You as an individual, maintaining a personal or doing a personal fanning of the flame of God in your life. Maintain a vibrant relationship with God. Have a vibrant relationship with God. That is, communicate with Him through prayer. Communicate with Him through Bible reading. That is, grow in your knowledge of God. All of these things will add fuel to that fire. It doesn't take a wise person or an older person to stand up here and tell you if you don't pray, if you don't read the Bible, that you're not going to have much in your spiritual life. A child can understand that, I suppose. But many times we do try to depend on that pilot that's always burning. We like to say, I know I struggle with this, and I imagine many of you do too. We're busy people, and oftentimes that communication with God gets pushed around. But if you want that flame to burn as Paul wanted to see it in Timothy's life, you're going to have to find that time to communicate with God through prayer and through Bible reading. Remember God. Remember what God has done in your life. How many times, when was the last time you sat down and you thought about the last year, and you just, in your mind, you say, I see God at work there. I see His hand working there. I see He was involved there. And learn from that. He's been faithful in the past. He will be faithful in the future. He will direct you. And I realize it's not always easy to believe that to be true. And it isn't. I can look back in our life and I say, well, God directed us from Poland to Oregon, and He did. But and that does give me confidence. But I still wrestle with the question of whether God will direct me from Halsey to wherever. I don't know where we're going, but wherever we end up moving to. Will He? And you might say, well, come on now. I mean, you came all the way from Europe to Halsey. And he worked everything out there. So why are you struggling with this simple little move from Halsey to point A, wherever that is? But the reality is that we sometimes don't take enough time to ponder how He has been faithful in the past. And to believe that He'll be faithful right now in your situation, and He'll be faithful in the future. It's a conscious thing that we need to think about. Remember what God has done. Fan the flame, fanning the flame in your own life. You can do that through a testimony for God. Don't be ashamed to speak of God. Don't be ashamed to live for God. 2 Timothy 1:8, the next verse there says, "So do not be ashamed to testify about our Lord, or ashamed of me, His prisoner, but join me in suffering. Join with me in suffering for the gospel by the power of God." Paul goes on to tell Timothy, he says, don't be ashamed. Just don't be ashamed. And again, I wish I had a good, easy solution to the shame that we struggle with as God's people. And maybe I speak this more to the men, because we don't stand out nearly as much. In fact, as we were traveling over here, I stopped and got gas. I forget where it was anymore, but I was going back to the car, and a man says, so where are you from? And are just some kind of a religion? But he said that not because of me. He said that because of my wife and my daughter. He said, and then we talked a little bit, and he went on to ask me questions like, so why do the women have to dress like that and stand out like that? And you dress like you do, and you don't stand out at all. How would you answer that question, men? And we have our little pat answers, I suppose, and they're all good. But don't be ashamed. I tried to testify. I tried to tell him who we were and what we believed. But many times we find ourselves holding back just a little bit because we don't really want to stand out. Have a testimony for God. Realize our responsibility to be a testimony. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, all power is given unto me in heaven and earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. That is our responsibility, to move forward in that direction, to share the gospel, to be a testimony. Another way to fan the flame, another way to cause that flame to grow in our lives is to maintain a vibrant relationship with other Christian people. Hebrews 10 says it like this, "And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching." I can look back in my life and I can see many, many people who I remember being amazed, being impressed, being influenced by their walk with God. I watched them and I said, there's a man of God, there's a woman, there's a couple, there's a family. And it made the flame in my life burn brighter. I took the time to observe. I remember being in a situation where I was in a group, and it was the responsibility of the group to get together every so often. I don't remember how often we got together, but it was a time of sharing, time of talking about our lives, time of mentoring. These people in this group mentored me and helped me to understand where I was and where I was going. But it was all because I wanted that flame to burn. I wanted that flame to be brighter. And I took the opportunity to be with other Christians, other believers. Be accountable to each other. Who likes accountability? Who likes to admit they made a mistake? Who likes to answer hard questions like, you know, did you have any struggle with purity this past week? I mean, who likes to answer that question, especially if the answer is yes? We don't really like to be accountable. We don't really like to, we say we do, and there's a certain side of us that does like it, I suppose. But on the other hand, if we can just get around it and say, well, you know, yeah, I had a little problem, but it's okay now. That's really not accountability. It's really not. That's really escaping. You say, well, I don't want to make a big deal about it. Well, we need people. If we want the flame to grow, we need to be accountable. We need to be open. That's what the Christian Brotherhood is all about. Not for me to point fingers and say, you've got this problem, and you've got this problem. But rather, for us to be able to come together as a group of men, as a group of women, whatever the group may be, and to say, look, I'm struggling with this. I had issues this week. I had issues this past month, and I need help. And I want to be accountable. And we do that because we want the flame to burn. And I believe Paul encourages, not specifically in this verse, but the idea of fanning the flame is caught up in the idea of accountability. The fanning of the flame of God in our lives is primarily my responsibility for me and your responsibility for you. You can never blame the condition of your flame on your church, on your family, on your marriage, on your pedigree, on your ancestors. You cannot do that because they are not responsible for your flame. They are not responsible for the condition of your flame. You say, well, you just got done saying you should be encouraging other and blowing on people's flames and helping them to burn. That's true. We need to do that. But you cannot step back and say, well, I've got just a little pilot light here that's about going out because nobody's come in the past week and blown on my flame. It's their fault. You cannot do that. But we live in a society that says, do that. Make somebody else responsible. You say, well, that's not in our church. Well, it might not be in your church. I have no idea. But it's in our society. It's in our culture where the blame is always somewhere else. So you want to blame the condition of your flame on someone else or something else. But it's not their fault. It's your fault if it's not what it should be. And so that's the primary thing. And I don't have much time to... I have one more point here and I'm just going to go over it quickly. But I think it's very important. But I'm running out of time. We are called to fan the flame of God in the lives of others. That is, the air moves from you to another person for the purpose of causing their fire for the Lord to burn brighter. And there's, in Isaiah 42, it says like this, "The bruised reed shall he not break, and the smoking flax shall he not quench." Talking about Jesus, I believe. And Jesus did it well. He did it better than any of us can do, I suppose. He knew when to blow. He knew how hard to blow. He knew how to encourage. He knew all of these things. And we sometimes, maybe you don't, but I have sometimes stepped back and said, well, he was God, and it was not really fair. He knew what these people needed. He knew how to say it so it wasn't going to offend. He knew how to put it in words that could be understood. He knew all these things. And now he's asking me to go talk to this person and do it in the same way. I can't do that. Because I'll probably offend. I'll probably say something that I shouldn't say. Or he'll understand it in a different way. Just talking with somebody yesterday. And he used an illustration to illustrate how people understand things so differently. Very simple illustration, but very profound. And we hold back sometimes. But I think the call for us as God's people is to step forward and blow on people's lives in a way that causes their fire for the Lord to burn. And not to become so individualistic, so isolated, and so unwilling to be involved that we just step back and say, well, I'll let somebody else do that this time. And then we have another opportunity the next week, and you say, well, I'll let somebody else do it this time as well. And we just refuse to be involved. That is not the way that God wants brotherhoods to function. And there are many reasons why you maybe can't do that. I'm not going to try to shoot all of those reasons down. I don't know what they all are. I just know that I am convinced that the call of that God has on our lives as churches is to be so involved with each other that we are able to encourage and fan the flames that are in people's lives in such a way that they burn brightly for the Lord. You need to be available. You need to be interested. You know, when there's difficulties, Galatians 6 says, bear you one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. In times of joy and sorrow, Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. Be intentional with encouragement. Deuteronomy 3:28 says, but charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him. For he shall go over before his people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which thou shalt see. Go and encourage him. He needs your encouragement. Blow on his life so that Joshua's fire can burn. Service. Galatians 5:13 says, for brethren, ye have been called into liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. These are all ways in which you can make the flame of that person sitting beside you, or that person you work with, or that person you talk to on the phone, whatever it might be. You can make it burn for the Lord. And that's what we want. That's what you want. At least I hope it is. I hope it's not just a desire for your flame to burn, but you have a desire that the flame of every person in your church burns so that this church can be a true light in the community of Chihuahua. Fanning the flame in others. Take the time to listen and to speak. Ecclesiastes 3:7 says, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. Don't miss the opportunities that are all around you to fan the flame of God in the lives of others. In our self-centeredness, we oftentimes do miss them. And I just urge you not to do that. Your church will be more vibrant. It will be more alive if each of you takes the time to blow on the lives of the people around you. Consider the flame of God in your life right now. How is it burning? I don't know. What are you doing to make it burn brighter? I don't know that either. If you would honestly look at your life, would you say it's about ready to go out? Is the normality of life causing your flame to just be a pilot flame? It's just burning there quietly. You don't cause any problems, but you don't make any difference either. Will changes in your life that are going to come, there's changes coming, there certainly is, will those changes snuff out the flame, or will it energize the flame? Take the time to consider the flame of God in the lives of the people around you. Look in your family, first in your families, then in your church. What do you see? Are there people struggling? Are there struggling flames that are flickering and almost going out? Are there some that don't seem to have any flame? Seems like there's only a bed of white ashes, black ashes. Are there some that have obvious flame burning for the Lord? All of these people need encouragement. We sometimes say that, well, that person who's on fire, there's a fire burning there. I don't need to do anything with him. He's got it all together. No, he does. Praise the Lord. But he needs your encouragement too. He needs a little puff of air. Take the time to give it to him. Commend him. You say, well, he might get a big head. Well, that's beside the point. That's another problem. And that's not what we're talking about. He needs your encouragement, or she, whatever the situation might be. All of these need the air of encouragement blown on their flame so they can start or continue to burn. You know, and this becomes a behind-the-scenes work, one that's rarely observed in action by the group. But as in the natural setting of fire, even with the best fuel available, the fire of an individual or a group will go out. Just remember what I told you about stuffing paper, and paper burns. Stuffing paper in, stacking wood on top of that, lighting that paper, it will go out. Even though paper is a very good fuel for fire, it will go out if it's not blown on often. And in our spiritual lives, if we don't take the time to provide the wind to cause the flames to burn, they will likely go out. So I encourage you to do that in your life, in your own personal life, in the lives of the people around you. Fan the flame of God in your own life. Fan the flames of God, flame of God in the lives of others. 2 Timothy 1:7, for this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. Thank you, and God bless you.